Hi, this is Les from the TV Dudes. Recently, I got to sit down and chat with John Ross Bowie. Currently, he plays Jimmy, the patriarch of the DeMeo family, on ABC's Speechless. But he perhaps is best known for playing Kripke on Big Bang Theory. We talked about his favorite memories from improv at Upright Citizens Brigade, as well as the most obscure thing he's ever been recognized for. Oh, and also how gross bats are. It's a great interview, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Thanks.
Hey, Les.
Hey, thanks so much for taking time to talk to me today.
Oh, my pleasure, man. Good to talk to you. Where are you based?
I'm in Austin, Texas.
Oh, cool. Okay.
In prepping for this, kind of binged my way through the second season of Speechless and really am loving that show. Two seasons in, have you found your approach to playing Jimmy changed at all?
A little bit, in the sense that we have gotten to see more aspects of Jimmy than, you know, just one season can afford. So, you know, we found out a little bit more as we proceed through the season, and there's more of this coming of, you know, Jimmy's, you know, where Jimmy's lines are and where his boundaries are. And, you know, we've been very careful to make sure that he's not just the standard, you know, sitcom dad who's scared of his wife. You know, we work really hard to make sure that as dominant a personality as Maya is, he still gets a vote. And it's been kind of fun to play that push-pull with Minnie, especially in the second season. You know, we had this intense episode that aired last week or the week before where Jimmy really stands up to Maya about homeschooling the kids. And it was unlike anything we'd done before. It was weird to shoot it, but it came out really well. And we were excited about it. So I'm just kind of going where the writers lead me. But it's fun to be consistently surprised by the character.
I find myself watching it and thinking that same thing, that it often zigs where I think it'll zag. That I'm thinking, for example, of Jimmy standing up to his employees as manager now in this season, and how much Maya...
Yeah, that was a really fun one. That was a really fun episode.
You know, how much she wants him to be aggressive, and the kind of ironic pushback of, no, I got to be aggressive on my own terms, I thought was just great. I find myself, when I watch it, relating to Ray. Not that I was quite that high strung of a kid, but simply because I was an anxious kid. Are there any side stories or other character stories on the show that you would really hope to get to explore in season three?
Well, Ray's a really interesting character. I mean, there's a lot of Scott Silveri. He's our executive producer, the guy who created the show. There's a lot of his father in Jimmy, and there's a lot of Scott in Ray. So that sense of having a brother with a disability and that being this driving force to make you this incredible overachiever, I think is really interesting. And it's an untouched on piece of real estate in storytelling. Ray's very relatable. He's very high strung. He's very smart. You know, I think we all like to think we're a little bit of Ray. I had the anxiety without the grades when I was growing up. So I sympathize, but it's going to be really interesting to watch that character kind of evolve over what I hope is a few more seasons, because he's very grounded in a place of truth. You know, if you've got a brother who can't speak, you are maybe going to be the guy who speaks for everybody and who maybe can't shut up. And I just think that's very relatable and understandable.
On the show, I assume it's a very tightly scripted show, but I know you have such a background in improv. Do you find that helps you on set?
Well, all acting is about, you know, half of acting is listening and reacting, and improv certainly comes into play there. But we are given a fair amount of freedom. Yes, it is very tightly scripted. Yes, we do things as written. But we also have fun runs if we've got time where we maybe come up with different endings or tweak the lines ever so slightly to, you know, sort of surprise ourselves or to, you know, try and make Cedric laugh, which is very, very hard to do. It's just really fun being on a show that's this well written, that you don't really feel like you've got to improvise to punch things up, yet they let us anyway, which is great. It's really fun. There've been a couple little things. There was a moment in the pilot where I'm showing off the house and I'm giving everybody a tour. And I point out that we have a cell phone tower in our backyard and point to my phone and say, look how many bars I have. I could call God. That was something I improvised during the audition, and they put it into the script and thankfully cast me. So I got to deliver the line I improvised, because that doesn't always happen. So yeah, they give us a fair amount of freedom. And at the same time, we've got such a sturdy roadmap in the script that we don't even need it.
Has there been do you have an absolute favorite scripted moment?
Off the top of my head, there's been a few, but there's a terrific moment. One of the things I love about the show is how no one really has a ton of money. Like, we're barely able to afford to pay Kenneth. A lot of it comes from the city we're living in. Kenneth comes in and he has to sell some stuff in order to get by. And they gave Jimmy the line, God, it really makes you wonder where the phrase "as rich as a public school aide" comes from. And I loved that moment. I had to run the line again and again and again so I could deliver it without laughing. But I was just trying to deadpan it into the bathroom mirror as much as I could, because it was mean, but it was also really funny and really sympathetic to Kenneth's plight, I thought. And I laughed a lot during delivering that line. We got a usable take, but it was hard.
Have there been any moments that you guys have done and then the energy was just wrong and you felt you needed to change? I feel like the show walks such a beautiful line, but could so easily be treacle or awkward. And I wonder how hard that is to feel out on the set.
You know, it's interesting. The best example of this comes, and I told this story before, but I think it's really representative of the line we have to walk on the show. There's a scene in season one where we're explaining to Cedric how the hidden costs of having a disability, and there's procedures and there's equipment and there's doctor's visits. And my line was, having a disability is expensive. It's almost not even worth it, which I thought was really funny, but like walks just up to the line of good taste. We shoot it. And then Scott comes down from the room, from the writer's room, comes down to set, looks at the scene and goes, okay, we need to get a shot of JJ laughing at that joke. Because if JJ laughs at that joke, then the audience knows it's okay. And that kind of like fine tuning is the essence of the show, is making sure that the show isn't treacly and isn't mawkish, but also isn't tasteless and South Park, you know? And I think it's those little moments of like making sure that we see JJ laugh. And Micah genuinely thought it was funny. So there was we weren't forcing him to do anything against his will. He thought it was funny. He laughs. That in turn gives permission to the audience to laugh. And then, you know, we're off to the races.
Going back to improv, you were in Upright Citizens Brigade. Is that right?
I took some classes with them. I took a bunch of classes and taught at their school. I started with them in 98, actually, almost 20 years now.
Do you happen to remember what the first improv scene you did, were you really proud, like this really worked?
I don't remember the first scene where I was really proud, but I remember my first scene. We were given a really interesting exercise. The teacher was a guy named Armando Diaz, who's a sort of an improv legend. He came out of Chicago, and he was my level one improv teacher. And he would put people up in pairs, and he would say, all right, now the central idea of improv is yes, and. We agree with someone, and we add to the information they're presenting. So I'm going to put you guys in a situation where you could end up arguing, but I don't want you to argue. I want you to find the agreement. And it was me and a guy named Ken Blankstein went up. This is May 1998, by the way, and it's burned into my memory like it happened 2 weeks ago. Me and Ken go up there, and we are given the scene setting of two guys going to pick up the same girl for a date. And we played sort of the confusion of are we talking about the same girl here? And, you know, we just found out more and more about her. Like, she had all these piercings and she had all these tattoos and she, you know, she had all these interesting scars and she was just turning into this very complicated woman that we were both there to get. And again, we weren't arguing, and Ken broke an improv rule and asked me a question, which is, how did you meet her? And I blurted out, seminary. And the audience, the rest of the class laughed. And I thought, yeah, that feels good. And then a day later, I woke up and I thought, you know, I should have said yeshiva. Yeshiva would have been funnier. And it's little moments like that that made me realize that I take this stuff seriously. Yeah. And it matters to me. But that was my level one class. And a couple months later, I quit my day job and got headshots.
What prompted you to start taking courses?
It was kind of a dare, I have time on my hands and some disposable income. I was having sort of a quarter life crisis. I was 27 and I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to, I was 26 actually. And I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do with myself. And I was writing, marketing copy for a consulting firm and not really enjoying it. And my buddy Andy Secunda had been taking classes at UCB and he said, "Oh, I think you'd be good at this. You should try it." And then I had met Rob Corddry when the two of us were temping together at Scholastic in New York. And he was already, you know, in New York to be an actor. That's what he wanted to do. So he was going to take this class anyway. And we kind of dared each other, like, why don't we both take this class? And then we'll sort of, you know, you'll take the Wednesday class, I'll take the Saturday class. And then we'll talk on Sunday and we'll kind of debrief. It was sort of I sort of stumbled into something that I was pretty good at. And, within about a year of quitting my day job, I was really lucky and, you know, I started to get some commercial work and it's been fairly steady since. There've been certainly some ups and downs, but I've managed to qualify for the union's health plan for close to 20 years now. So that's something.
That puts you ahead of a whole lot of people.
Yeah, no, I don't. I recognize how lucky I am. I really, really do.
Is there a favorite role you've ever done that just nobody ever seems to recognize you for? Other than your obvious IMDb Arrested Development credit.
You've read about that, I see. I really wish my non-existent work on Arrested Development got a little more credit, I have to say. You know, I'm so proud of the work I'm doing on Speechless. And you know, there's been certain weird moments here and there where, you know, I did an episode of House of Lies with Don Cheadle, who's, you know, an American treasure. He's one of our great actors. And, you know, I had this super intense scene with him. And usually nobody ever brings it up. But just this past weekend, I was at a comedy festival and a guy comes up to me and he goes, "John, can I have an autograph?" And he puts in front of me a photo of me and Don Cheadle from that episode of House of Lies. And I was like, "Wow, I've never signed this picture. I'd be happy to." It was just one of those weird moments of, I was really proud of this project. I'm glad people, some people remember it. You know, I mean, it's the whole career that you, this whole acting thing is just such a series of like scratcher tickets that you sometimes, you know, make 20 bucks or make 50 bucks. And most of the time you're just going to rub out the silver and there won't be anything there at all. And you just got to throw it out. So, you know, I try not to like live too much in a space of, wow, I wish I had done more of this, or I wish more people appreciated that, and just really count my blessings that I've had so many lucky scratcher tickets.
Well, for your part, you've done some exceptional work. I really loved you on Big Bang Theory, and then watching you go from, frankly, such a bully on that show to such a caring person on Speechless has been a wonderful show of range. Has it been fun getting to play a more sympathetic character?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I love playing Kripke, and I love like how he's just pure id and is just out for Kripke, and that's it. And there is something weirdly satisfying the way it, you know, the way it must be to play a Bond villain. But it's also nice as a father to play a father and, you know, use what I've learned from my kids in, you know, raising my fake kids. It's just fun to do different stuff. You know, I've played, you know, victims and perpetrators, and there's a fun Hulu series called The Wrong Mans. And I'm in the second season of that playing the lawyer for a drug magnet, me and James Corden and Matthew Bainton. And that was a complete, you know, change of pace. I'd never done anything like that before. Playing sort of a high status, really genuinely threatening villain. But yeah, I've been really fortunate that, you know, I haven't played an action hero or anything like that, but I haven't been too typecast, and I've been able to do a lot of different things. It's been really exciting.
Well, I've absolutely enjoyed your work on Speechless so far, and I'm looking forward to more of it. Thank you so much for taking time to talk to me today.
Les, totally my pleasure, man. Enjoy Austin.
Will do.
Is that crazy bridge full of bats still there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it's the largest bat colony in North America. I may be wrong on that.
Oh, that's gross. That's super, super gross.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's really right. Weird to see. A lot of people go down there, and every time I drive past them, I think you're insane. That's a lot of bats.
So many bats. all right. Well, stay safe, man.
You too. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Take care.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.